4. We stand there for a full minute, side by side in a kind of perplexed trance. We scan the sky for any hint of smoke, but it's just not there. The bright blue sky is unmarred.
"Smoke don't just disappear," Levi says. "Not like that, even if someone put the fire out."
"The clouds," I say.
"Ain't no clouds neither."
"That's the point," I say. "There were clouds on our way up." I start noticing more aberrations. They're subtle at first, but once I see it, I can't not see it, and I can't keep myself from reacting. Unsteady on my feet, I lean forward, hands on knees, mind reeling.
"You gonna puke?" Levi asks.
"The leaves," I say, glancing toward him. From my lowered position, I can see his arm, the hair standing on end as goosebumps cover his skin. The air. I give him a moment to take it all in, and then I add another observation. The smell. Levi takes a deep breath and whispers,
"Snap my garters, it ain't summer no more."
Given that the trees around us have just started changing color, I'd place us around mid-October, which means we've leapt 2 months forward in time, or...
"Must have been that shit that passed by, did something to the trees, to the air."
Or that. And while that's the most likely answer, it's also horrifying. Means the explosion's effect altered not just the trees and the smoke, but also the clouds beyond. How far did the effect stretch? And if it changed the trees, what did it do to us? "That'd be my guess," I say, trying to sound confident, leaving out the fact that the rough dirt road has been smoothed over, all signs of erosion mostly wiped away. I can almost wrap my mind around something affecting tree leaves and a shockwave blowing away smoke and dispersing clouds, but how could it smooth out a worn path? "Let's move," I say, starting back downhill. "Double time." We jog in silence, gravity propelling us forward. And for a few minutes, I think our run for help is going to be uneventful. Then I realize we should have passed the truck, not to mention the scorched earth and trees surrounding it. I slow to a stop and turn back.
"What now?"
Levi says, skidding to a stop, fear in his voice.
"You hear something?"
"You seen the truck?" I ask. Levi stands beside me, hands on hips, catching his breath.
"Ain't that the berries?"
I smile. When he's agitated, Levi is a treasure trove of Appalachian charm. He offers a theory.
"Maybe it was, I don't know, launched by the shockwave?"
It's not a bad idea, but the logic just doesn't add up. If that were the case, we'd have both been airborne, too. He folds his arms over his chest, the cooler air taking a toll on his exposed skin.
"I reckon you can't tell me, and maybe this ain't the time to ask, but what is Synergy working on?"
"Right time," I say with a dip of my head. "And while I couldn't tell you if I knew, I actually don't know, and that I can tell you." I start backpedaling down the road. "Just keep your eyes open for debris. If it was launched, it'll be somewhere downhill." We shift our attention forward again and follow the road. Instead of running, we maintain the cautious creep of a predator on the prowl, or that of nervous prey. I'm not yet sure which we are, but I can't shake the feeling that we are royally screwed. I search the path for more strange changes, but everything else seems normal as fall in the middle of August can. I'm no scientist, but I can make peace with the idea of that pressure wave aging leaves and knocking shit around, even the clouds. But I cannot come to terms with the temperature drop or the smell of decay in the air. Whatever that shrieking kaleidoscope was, it didn't just give the land the appearance of fall. It transported us smack dab into the middle of October.
"How far down does Synergy's land stretch?"
Levi asked. "All the way down," I answer, watching a bird flit through the sky. "And beyond. They own a good portion of the land in and around town. Bunch of the mountains, not just a dell, but none of it is secured." I point at a small bird, its wings green on top, yellow on the bottom, with a distinctive splash of black beneath its beak. I smile at the sight of it, transported through time to my childhood backyard, sitting in a lawn chair, sipping on mellow yellow, and watching birds at the feeder with my grandmother.
"You know what that is?"
"A bird,"
he says. "That fence runs all the way down the mountain?"
"Yeah," I say, eyes still on the bird as it lands and starts singing a tune I haven't heard in 30-plus years. "It's a Bachman's warbler."
"Something special about them?"
he asks. "They're extinct," I tell him. pausing to listen to the music, letting it retrieve fond memories of the gray-haired woman who made the finest beef stew and biscuits east of anywhere. Since 1988.
Well, they ain't extinct no more, Levi says. You know, they get that wrong sometimes. Just last week, my biology teacher said that eastern mountain lions have been declared extinct, but I seen one just last year.
Right about that, I say. I've seen them twice over the past 2 years, but what are the odds that we spot a bird no one has seen in more than 30 years?
You a naturalist now? A bird watcher? How do you know they're still on the extinct list?
I don't, I say, a little begrudgingly. But if this bird was anywhere in these woods before today, I'd have known.
The all-seeing, all-knowing grandmaster of the deep woods, huh?
Levi is smiling despite the strangeness of our situation.
Must chap your ass to be lost in your own backyard.
Well, thank you, Billy Sunday, for stating the obvious. Levi has a chuckle.
Billy Sunday. Military took you out of Appalachia, but something to these mountains stuck with you, huh? Kind of sad that part was old Billy.
Billy Sunday was an old-time baseball player back in the late 1800s, when the sport was just starting to become a national pastime, and players' images were immortalized on tobacco cards. At some point in his career, the Lord came calling, and he became an evangelist. Was a big deal in these parts, so much so that his name became part of the local lingo.
As strange as your mystery chickadee might be, to no one with a life, I think y'all might want to have a look over this way.
Levi heads to the roadside, hand over his forehead to block out the high sun.
Just a guess, but a missing fence is a mite bit odder than the startling appearance of a bird.
Missing fence? I step past Levi into the brush on the roadside. It's just... I squint into the shaded forest. The fence runs along the roadside, somewhere between 10 and 20 feet in from the tree line. Effective, but not an eyesore. Not like the no trespassing signs. My eyes dart to the line of outermost trees lining the road. The signs are gone. All of them. They could have been torn away by the pressure wave, I think, but I know it's not true, because as much as my mind is telling me it's impossible, Levi is right. The fence is missing. I step into the forest to confirm it for myself, to make sure the fence isn't farther in because of rough terrain or a freestanding boulder, but that's not the case. The fence, miles of it, topped with razor wire, is missing.
You don't need to act brave on my account, Levi says, standing behind me. Cause honestly, I feel better to know I'm not the only one shitting my britches.
He steps past me, searching the forest.
It should be here, right? There's no way the whole thing got taken away while all the trees stayed rooted down. I mean, they anchor that shit with concrete, down deep. A tornado'd lift these trees away before the fence post. There ain't even holes in the ground.
Don't need to tell me, I say, stepping back toward the road, feeling a little pale and numb.
Just tell me what's going on.
Levi's fears unvarnished and pure. All traces of masculine bravado have faded. What if I could, kid? This is beyond me. The crunch of dirt and stone beneath my feet tells me I've reached the road. When I stop, the crunching continues, and it's joined by a low, monotonous rumble. Heart beating hard, I turn uphill, expecting to see another world-distorting wave racing toward us. But the mountainside is clear.
A truck,
Levi says, stepping into the road. An old Chevy pickup bounces up the old road, the pace slow and steady, the man behind the wheel not in a rush. The brown truck looks familiar, and while my brain says it's old, maybe even a classic, it looks brand new. We stand on the side of the road, waiting for the approaching truck to pull up. As it approaches, I'm struck with a sudden sense of deja vu. The truck. The fall air. This road. It can't be him. When I see the driver's face, I understand in part what's happened.
You gonna pass out? Levi asks.
Breathing like I've just run a race, I manage to say. Wave them past.
But they can give us a do-it.
My clenched teeth and glare snap him into compliance. He waves the truck past as the driver begins to slow.
Everything okay?
A familiar voice asks from the truck. A glance is all it takes to confirm the impossible. Then I divert my eyes back to the ground, mind reeling. Takes every ounce of my strength to not fling the door open and tell him how much I miss him. But I can't. Because this isn't right. This isn't natural. And that's not him. Can't be.
Fine and dandy,
Levi says. He sounds a little strained, but still convincing.
Just out enjoying the October air. Good day for it, the driver says. I'm tempted to look up, to look him and his young passenger in the eyes, but I can't bring myself to do it. He okay? The man asks about me. Out of breath is all, I manage to say, lifting my hand in a wave. Well, y'all take care, the driver says. And if you hear rifle shots, just means me and the boy are having good luck. After the truck accelerates up the mountainside, bathing us in a cloud of exhaust, Levi leans in close and asks, What in tarnation was that about? We could have been in town inside of 10 minutes. Now we gotta... That was my father, I say. Levi's mouth snaps shut. His brow furrows. And then he comes to the obvious conclusion. Bullshit. He couldn't have been much older than you. No way he's your pa. And you said your father was dead. I force myself to stand, sucking cool fall air into my lungs. For more than 30 years. You lost me, chief, Levi says, looking both annoyed and afraid. Some part of him has gleaned the truth, but the rest of him isn't accepting it. That man was my father, I repeat, because I need to hear it as much as Levi does. And that kid sitting next to him, that was me.